This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Still feels like summer here in Texas, but believe it or not, it's time to plant your winter garden. What do you know to get started by keeping your existing garden flourishing and your grass green? Get your trees bouncing back to rehab them after this difficult, stressful, long summer. David Rodriguez is with us. He's with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. He's an agent for them, expert in horticulture with here in Bear County. And David, welcome back to the
Source. Yeah, thank you for the invite. And we're being optimistic. You know, fall started, this past Monday, and we're still hitting 90-plus degree temperature. But we're trying to be as optimistic as possible, like all farmers, that the rain's coming and it's going to cool down. So.
Sure.
And our number is, when, but it's coming.
It'll come eventually, yeah, but we don't know in how soon it'll get here. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. I've got a question for David. Talk about your gardening conundrums, 210-614-8980. So those conundrums are growing up pretty good these days.
Yeah, you know? A lot of crispy everything out there. You know, people are it'll get better, but so, we need to get our fall garden going here if you haven't started on it yet.
Yeah. So how unusual are the conditions we've got right now?
Well, as soon as we complain about one thing, then we get a lot of rain. We complain about that.
Yeah.
You know, it goes from one extreme to the next, but we just go straight forward, get those beds well prepared, work in that finished compost with some pre-plant granulated fertilizer, and then if the weather stays hot, you know, a lot of people plant their fall tomatoes as early as July and August, no later than the first week of September. But, you know, we do much better with fall vegetables here. You know, we used to be the winter garden, the South Bear County. So if we can look at using drip irrigation, that only saves water and possibly reduces some of that weed pressure. But you're planting these plants straight into little mud right where the dripper's at. You mud them in, almost putting them in on IV. But that's probably one of the best ways to get going, particularly with early plantings here.
Right, but our planting season doesn't mesh up very well with the planting season that the big box stores want us to have.
Yeah.
So it helps to find local suppliers who are more in tune with what we got going on here.
Yeah, independent nurseries. We still have about six that have been in business for many years here in Bear County. We have one of the oldest wholesale plant growers that's been doing this for almost 54 years now, and working directly with Extension Service all these years, for the last 50 years since the Dr. Sam Cotner years in the mid-60s. We've done all the legwork. That's what extension horticulture is all about, you know, doing these trials of broccoli, cabbage, tomatoes, et cetera. So the nurseries have them. We always say October is the best time to start direct seeding all your root crops, your leafy grains, and then setting out transplants of broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, kale, et cetera. And we're trying to shoot for typically around Christmas dinner for a lot of this to come in, or right about New Year's or so. So let's at least minimum get these beds prepared and leveled out, weed-free, cleaned up, working that fertilizer and the compost and drip irrigation, and it's going to cool down, David. I'll guarantee you that.
It will cool down. It's just a question of when. So, but doing all that work, you know, one of the beautiful parts of doing fall gardening is that it's cooler.
Yes.
So you're not out in the 100-degree heat.
Yeah, you're right.
Working.
You're right.
And so I keep getting these bigger and bigger hats, you know, to try and shield me from the sun. And I feel like now I'm walking around with like a beach umbrella on top of my head, trying to give me some protection from the sun.
Yeah, we got to start early in the morning or late in the evening. And, you know, one of the quotes they always say, your best person in your garden is your shadow. You're out there often. You have an inquisitive attitude, seeing things grow and bloom. And then your second best friend in your garden is a sharpened grubbing hoe, so when you're walking around, you can chop a weed here or there and keep an eye on everything, make notes, do a journal. That's what the kids do at the children's garden at the Botanical Garden. They start this Saturday on week four, and they got some of their plants going pretty good, but it has been a challenge this last month to keep everything watered, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that is the issue, especially if you're putting little sprouts into the ground.
Definitely.
And it doesn't have a lot of protection from the direct sunlight, and if it doesn't, just a little bit of lack of moisture, and that thing just shrivels up and goes away.
It's not forgiving. That's correct.
So it's a tough time. Yeah. And this should be the time when we're really sort of like having fun.
Yeah, and when you lay out the transplants particularly, you never plant on dry soil. You know, make sure it's sufficiently has good moisture, and then you never set out transplants that are dry. And then after you water the plants, firm them in, water them in real well. Put a little bit of a layer of a good organic mulch around it, like a double shredded hardwood mulch. Water that in again, and that will unbelievable learning from Malcolm Beck many, many moons ago, who we recognize as the godfather of Texas organic gardening, one of the best citizen scientists that we've ever had. He always used to show us it's 106 degree heat index out here. And underneath that mulch layer, using a soil thermometer, a probe, it's 80 degrees. So that mulch does make a big, big difference, especially on these little plants that we set out there.
And also on the heat island effect, if you want to have a cooler grounds, and then your dogs will recognize that as well, because they'll start rolling around in it. They'll realize it's got cooler over here in the mulch. So Alexa on Twitter, for those of us in apartments, what kind of winter plants are suitable to grow in smaller pots and containers?
Good question there. We usually say, as a rule of thumb, most vegetables, being warm or cool weather vegetables, ideally like 8 to 10 hours of full sun. But going forward with October, we transition predominantly into cool weather crops, and those can take at least 4 up to 6 hours, ideally, of sunlight. So use an appropriate size a container that has WIPOs, drainage holes on the bottom, a basin to collect the water. Do not let the water stagnate long in that basin after you water. And you can do any of the root crops, including carrots, radish, beets, turnips, just to name a few. You can do also direct seeding of a lot of the leafy greens, be it mustard greens, lettuce, or you can find some of those transplants going into the October, November planting time frame. If you don't have the best sunlight or air circulation, try to rotate those containers every so often, and then just use a premium potting mix when you first plant them up. Cut that potting mix with at least 20% of a good finish, high-grade compost. Lace that mix with a copious amounts of a slow-release container fertilizer. Be a good fertilizer that's alfalfa-based or poultry-based. Work that in. And you can have a lot of spinach and leafy greens and lettuce and all that in the next couple months or so. So everyone should be able to do some gardening as well.
We're talking with David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture here in Bexar County. Got a question about gardening, about getting your yard to recover from the summer beat-up season that we had. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Anthony and Laurie, we'll get you on the phones. We'll get you on the air right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. How about doing some winter gardening? Ever thought about gardening and you think, well, you should do it in the springtime? Actually, here in South Texas, winter gardening, fall gardening, that's really the prime time. And David Rodriguez is with us with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service to tell you how to do it. The number to call in, 210-614-8980. Anthony is on the line. Anthony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, sir.
Hi.
Hey. I've been in Hays County for several years now.
Okay.
And I've noticed that it's getting hotter longer, it feels like, other than like an occasional surprise frost. But I was wondering if there's any crops that seem seem to do better, like since it feels like perhaps maybe the growing seasons are extending a little bit.
All right, Anthony, thank you for the call. So I've heard that they are adjusting the zones a little bit, the microzones that we have for growing things.
Yeah, most of our – if you go to the Bexar County Extension Service website, which our recommendations use San Antonio as a baseline, and you can go up to Hays County, San Marcos, and south all the way to Laredo. So we use about a couple hundred-mile radius of San Antonio. Our vegetable list, both spring and fall, is there as a guideline – that gives you varieties and selections from those varieties that have proven the test of time. And we usually have and seed versus transplant also on there. But we usually have a what we call a 30-day window, okay? And that 30-day window kind of gives you this scenario that, well, should I plant it early? You know, we always want the neighborhood bragging rights of getting the first planting going, you know, like we do in the spring, but it's still kind of cool, right? Or should we wait? So we usually, on most of these varieties, we have about a 30-day window, and then you can adjust accordingly if you still think it's a little bit hot and maybe wait till about mid-October. But, you know, you need to find that breaking point, go forward and get it done, maintain the best you can, because as soon as you know, that same statement within a year's time, less than a year's time. Look at last early November was the earliest 102-year-old record-breaking cold spell. So we're talking about warm weather now, but look at last November. So that's weather. You know, things change on a heartbeat, but we just use historical facts of what farmers have used, use this baseline 30-day window guideline, and just plow ahead and go forward. That's all we can do.
But there are some plants, winter plants, that can take a freeze.
Yes. All these cool weather crops, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower is going to be the most cold sensitive of all these cold crops, C-O-L-E crops, collards, kale, and all those.
If like Old King Cole.
Old King Cole.
That's what they're talking about. Coleslaw.
Coleslaw, you're right.
So these are all a sort of a type of plant.
Yeah, so either the transplants or seed, but if you set out a young transplant or a seed, germinates right out of the ground and we're expecting heavy winds and some frost the following morning, even if they have more cold vigor to them, those young, tender plants are still susceptible to potential burn from wind or that morning frost. So the same material that we use for March early plantings of tomatoes around our tomato cages, the insulate, the white cloth, the grow web, the winter protection blanket, we can make little Quonset, little greenhouses around these young, tender plants because, you know, y'all that have been here long enough, particularly January and February, when we start rodeo, you know, y'all can wake up first thing in the morning with your heater on, and then by 2 o'clock, you got your air condition on. So that's how the weather fluctuates here so quickly.
I wonder how the rodeo always messes with weather. It's like, you know, it's going to be wet and cold when the rodeo comes.
Yeah, wet and cold, you're right.
So, but root plants, like your carrots, turnips, parsnips, they can definitely take
freeze. Oh, definitely, yeah.
It sweetens them up, that freeze.
Yeah, October, you know, you go to the old food bank where the urban farm is off 151 Callahan, that area. You know, that's we have the oldest Belgian migration in the country here. And, you know, the Vandewallies used to grow 1,000 acres in the 50s, 60s, early 70s before urban sprawl started here in the 80s. And so just imagine just in Bexar County alone having 1,000 acres of carrots that were used to be railroad carts up to Illinois and places like that. That was amazing.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Laurie. Hi, Laurie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air with David Rodriguez.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about how to winterize and prune my Vitex cassius, which I had planted last year and has grown into a huge, beautiful plant despite all of the drought we've had. So yes. Do you have any advice on that?
Oh, definitely. Yes, that's an excellent plant.
What's the plant again?
Vitex agnus castus, which we have recognized as one of our Texas superstar selections years back, and we also call it the Texas lilac plant, but it looks similar to a lilac, but it doesn't have the fragrance of a lilac. So more information on this plant, you can read up on it off the TexasSuperstar.com website, which is off the Aggie Horticulture website. And our recommendation in growing this is basically grow it as a big salvia perennial type plant. So March 1st, depending on the winter, we tell you to cut it to the ground. Harsh. Cut it all the way to the ground March 1st. Then with the warmer weather, it comes out. It stays very bushy. And then as a rule of thumb on these perennial type plants, and it'll get about 5-6 feet tall, plenty of blooms. When they're about 80% spent blossom, when 80% of those blooms are fading out, so we don't let them go to seed, we trim them back about another third. And every time we do this, we give them a little bit fertilizer, granulated fertilizer, replenish that organic mulch around them. And we do that a couple times throughout the year so we can see all those butterflies, bumblebees, honeybees, and other awesome beneficial insects that tend to go to those 12-inch or so flower, purple-bluish flower spikes. But you want to make your last cutback no later than about September 1st or so. We don't want to be cutting back a lot of this plant material too hard, too late in the year, because if we get tender growth, we have to remember, you know, we've had cold spells here as early as Halloween, and typically our first frost date is about mid-November.
Now, that lilac plant, how different is that than the French lilac plant?
Yeah, we've given that common name, Texas lilac. It has a pretty large flower tip, but it doesn't have fragrance as the traditional northern lilac or Korean Persian type lilacs, which really don't grow well here because our nighttime temperatures are so extreme and our soils are very alkali here, so those do not typically do well here.
So it's not a true...
not a true lilac. That's just a colloquial name that we've given it.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Susan on the phone. Susan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. I was wondering how I saved my St. Augustine backyard from all the weeds.
All the weeds. The weeds. Somehow the weeds do well during these conditions.
Yeah, and especially right after it rains. So the challenge is weed management is always an issue on these warm season turf grasses, St. Augustine's, Bermuda, Zoja lawns that we try to grow here. And we all need a little bit of exercise. So if pulling them out or grubbing them out is not an answer, the best weed control is your lawnmower, a well-maintained lawnmower with sharp blades. And just keeping these weeds in check. The key is one weed can be thousands of weeds the following year, so we never want them to flower or set seed. And a lot of these annual-type weeds, mowing them down a couple times or so, they use their reserves up and push energy to get that new growth back up to go back into reproductive mode again. And often by mowing a couple times or so, you're going to kill a lot of those weeds out. So mowing, trying to water when we can, be very conservative on how we water, but at the same time being very efficient. And one of the best ways to conserve water in these lawns is maybe cut back the amount of lawn you think you need. Take advantage of some of the coupons that our water purveyor, San Antonio Water Systems, offers on the conservatory side there, awesome coupons they have. And then from about October-ish to early April, I think early March is the best time, every third year on our soils that are predominantly clay-like soils, core aerate the lawn and put about a half an inch or so of a highly finely screened lawn dressing, compost lawn screening that has very little sand, if any, in there. And you'll find out when we do need to... we bank water all year long, and we use the water during the peak months of July and August. That will cut back our watering demands because that organic material acts as a sponge. And the amount of water we use in July and August can be cut back big time by using the core aeration and lawn dressing process.
What about taking care of our trees right now? I mean, our trees are – you can look around, and they're hurting.
Yeah, you're right. Well, a lot of the tree species, you see bald cypress and sycamore and a few others that have larger leaves to them, they were so happy this spring. We had so much rain, everything's growing,
and then lots of flushes of growth, and then the brakes were thrown on, all this root system out there, and we're seeing some yellowing. Once a month, in lieu of significant rain events, particularly trees that are 10 years or less, give them a good drink, keep them well mulched, and remember, if they don't look that good now, most of them will be dropping their leaves here pretty soon for the fall time.
So an email from Kathy says, I have many older oaks and elms. Please tell me how to keep them watered correctly.
Deep watering. You look at the eave of your house. After it rains, you see the water predominantly come off the roof edge right there. And that's the same as the outskirt branches of a tree. That's the drip line. So when we have to put water out, or when we fertilized a lot of these tree species, usually March 1st, and September the 1st, put a little bit extra when you put your lawn fertilizer out or your flower bed fertilizer. Give it a drink, especially in that root zone area and a little bit beyond that drip line. In lieu of significant rain events, at least once a month, a thorough deep soaking. We've seen all this, and droughts have been much more severe than what we're seeing now back in 2006 and back-to-back with 2007. So We act conservative when it comes to water conservation. We bank the water. We use it very wisely. And when it's time to use our savings account, you might say, mid-June to about mid-September, then we use that water wisely during that time frame.
So tell me if I'm doing this right or wrong. I take my water hose and I try and turn it down as tight as I can just so I get like a little drip out of my water hose. And then I put that at the base of one of my trees.
A lot of people do that, David.
Okay. Am I doing it wrong?
You're doing it wrong.
All right.
It's like us drinking a real nice a cool glass of lemonade with ice, and we're putting it in our ears. So the trunk, the trunk right there, the main feeder roots are not there. And in reality, I see it often. You're right. And in reality, some of these younger trees, you can rot them out and have disease issues. So go to the drip line and go right at the drip line heaviest, a little bit beyond and a little bit inside, and focus on that drip line. 90% of a tree's root system is typically 6 to 12 inches below the soil surface. It takes an inch of water typically to saturate 4 inches of our heavy clay soil. So that's why we have to give it a deep, thorough soaking. Get one of those little sprinklers and move it kind of around the 360 degree as best you can around that tree and deep soak it. And again, once a month when it's really dry. And of course, we start tapering when the weather cools down going into the fall and winter time.
What about them water bags that they sell?
That's a good thing. Some of the arborists get upset, but I'll say it. So the thing about these gator bags or these water bags is they fill them up with water and they have little holes in the bottom, and it drips directly at that young, new root ball. But when you drive around town and you see trees that have had this, you don't want to keep them on no more than 6 months or so. But driving around town, you see a lot of trees that have had them a year plus. Remember, they only work if you refill them with water. And that's the biggest issue people aren't doing.
All right, so more questions about helping your lawn recover from this hot summer and how to look forward to winter gardening with our expert, David Rodriguez. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Have you ever thought about starting a little herb garden? Questions about that, we welcome. What kind of herbs would you want to grow? What are some tips that David can give you to do that? 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health. The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need. Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What are your plans for the weekend? Maybe you're thinking about doing some work on that yard, that garden that you kind of neglected over the past few months because it's been so darn hot. Well, what can you do? What's the best way to apply some new fertilizer, to weed it out, and to put in some plants that are going to do you some good? The number to call to get some advice from David Rodriguez on how to do that, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Mike on the phones. And Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is about banana plants. I planted them, they're transplants from many years ago. It's those mini ones, and they stopped yielding about 8 years ago. I was just wondering what I could do to remedy that situation.
So there's many types of bananas. I love those red leaf ones with the big leaves, but the one that you can get edible fruit off is one called Dwarf Cavendish, and I've seen some at the Botanical Garden Zoo and other residential areas. So they are a little bit of a water hog. You know, bananas come from regions that get possibly up to 60 inches of rainfall a year. So they need that water. They need plenty of sun. It's best to kind of plant them in a microclimate location, particularly away from the cold northern winds of wintertime. And in order to get bananas out of them, we kind of need a mild winter. Normally, depending on the selection, you need anywhere from 11 to possibly up to 14 months of no freeze on them. Now, if they do freeze down and you clean up the debris off these plants, you got to wear your painter's outfit, because once you get that banana juice on your clothes, it will not wash off. It'll stain. So be careful with that when you do that. When they start emerging from corms, from the roots, from the ground the following spring, what we're trying to do is keep the biggest trunks, the biggest canes. And some people will go as far as digging those in the wintertime, kind of bare root them, and then resetting them out in the springtime. If you leave those in place, the key is to protect the biggest of the biggest trunks. You can lose the leaves on the top, but as long as you insulate that trunk, you can wrap it with burlap. People put a blanket with paper. People pile up leaves on it. You're trying to insulate that trunk, and then if it makes it, it will resprout, and then the main trunks are what you're looking for. All these little baby shoots that come out, you need to cut those off, put the energy in those main trunks, which will have big leaf mass, and then potentially, if they can go those 11 to 14 months, a little bit fertilizer, a little bit extra water, then we might get some banana production off them. So they're hit and run, but I've seen a lot of good bananas grown in and around this area.
What kind of fertilizer?
Any all-purpose fertilizer that you use in your lawn, that you use in your vegetable garden, like Medina Growing Green, Texas Tea, any of those types of fertilizers.
Email from Nancy. I want to plant a live oak tree. Is there a specific one I should look for in South Texas?
Yes, good question. Most of the live oaks that are sold at the nurseries, they refer to them as hybrids. And what that really means on the live oak situation is the grower has some beautiful mother trees that have a nice uniform umbrella canopy. They harvest those acorns off those superior mother trees, and then they grow them. So any of these live oaks that are typically referred to as hybrid live oaks at the nursery are the ones to consider planting. Fall is for planting. You know, we typically have mild winters here. Yes, I know it's hot. It's going to cool down. Rain is coming. So you have a jump ahead from spring, and then you'll get the root system more established, you might say, before the summer heats. When you purchase a tree, get a good balance. Bigger does not necessarily mean better. Make sure you have a nice tree, healthy leaves, good canopy, but not too big. You want it in balance with that root system. When you put it in the back of your pickup truck, remember when you're going 74 miles per hour on the highway, that's a Category 1 hurricane. So be careful how you transport it, how you plant it. Don't plant them too deep in the hoe. And then for other tree considerations, go to our sister agency, the Texas A&M Forest Service Tree Selector. You put your zip code county in there, and it'll make you think where this tree goes, and it'll give other tree selection species to consider for your landscape as well.
And back to the phones with Elaine. And Elaine, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would love to have a yard full of flowering plants, but the only thing I've been able to grow here is rocks. So could you give me a specific plant that will flower consistently through the winter?
Okay. All
right, Elaine, thank you for the call.
So it depends what we're looking for. For instance, fall is the ideal time to start direct seeding wildflowers, be it blue bonnets, Mexican hat, Indian blanket, you know, others like that. So if it blooms in the spring, you put the seeds out in the fall. They overwinter. They initiate the growth, and then they bloom in the springtime. And then if you manage those and they reseed or possibly naturalize, then, you know, you'll have nice stands. So the Wild Seed Farm in Fredericksburg, John Thomas's, is the oldest family-owned wild seed farm in the nation. So a lot of good information on that. Hardy perennial-like plants would be Texas Superstar plants. If you go to the TexasSuperstar.com website, off of Aggie Horticulture, there's a lot. So one of the prettiest winter blooming is a low-growing species lantana that you see grow in the sun or the shade. It's called purple trailing lantana. This is a male sterile selection. It's not the invasive one. So that's one of the prettiest ones. Put some bulbs that naturalize, like paper white narcissus that bloom in January or so. Put some bearded irises out, German bearded irises. Those usually bloom around February, early March, and late winter going in springtime. So there's a ton. Go to your favorite nursery. Work with a professional, certified nursery professional, and they'll come up, and as well as the TexasSuperstar.com website for other considerations.
So a bearded iris, that's a bulb plant, right?
It's considered a bulb. It's really a rhizome. Those old cemetery irises, which are the white ones.
Sure.
The purple's the prettiest one. It's kind of like a ginger root almost.
Sure.
So you don't plant, you need to make sure it's visible when you plant it. And that those are plants that come back year in and year out.
But yeah, so you keep them, you get them established in a bed.
Yes.
What would be a good place to put that in a yard? A lot of sun, a little shade.
You know, ideally, most of the plants are like us in July and August. If they get full sun most of the year in July and August, shade past 2 o'clock, they're happier. If you don't have that, as long as they get 6 hours of sun, they should be very happy in that location.
All right, let's go to Bill on the phones, 210-614-8980. If you've got a question for David Rodriguez. And here's Bill. Bill, you're talking to David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent of Agriculture here in Bear County.
Hey, thank you. So I've got a palmetto lawn, and I tend to get weeds. Is now a good time to put a pre-emergent on? And can you tell me a good brand to use?
Yeah, so Bill has palmetto, and that's a selection of St. Augustine, like FJ Select and Del Mar, that has a little bit more shade tolerance. And it's very difficult to grow any of these turf grasses in shade, but St. Augustine has some of the best shade tolerance, particularly under the canopy of big oak trees. So less inputs, let it grow taller, fertilize it half what you would do for full sun, watch the watering a little bit closer. So a pre-emergent herbicide is like an insurance policy. So you're putting out a product similar to lawn fertilizer that will minimize the seeds when they germinate. So we're going into cool weather weeds. And, Bill, we usually say mid-August to early to mid-September. And the way the weather has been going right now, I think you would still have time to consider putting a pre-emergent herbicide out. Always read and follow label instructions, of course, for square footage. Look for the active ingredients, Barricade, Dimension, or Amaze, and those are what we call broad spectrum, both for grassy and broadleaf weeds, because winter weeds are just around the corner. So let's get it out if you did not put it out earlier for the fall season.
So an herb garden, there are certain herbs that grow very well in the cooler temperatures.
Yeah, cilantro.
Yeah.
Let's get the seeds out. Cilantro seed, or Chinese parsley, the seed look like brown BBs that you harvest in May after they bloom that white, dainty-like flower around March, April or so. You plant coriander seed, and coriander seed is used for Mexican cookies and things like that. So October to March, you can do multiple plantings of cilantros, but it is a cool weather seed type of an herb. Start planting those here pretty soon. There's a lot of the warm weather herbs, particularly basils and things like that. As soon as it gets real cold, they get nipped and they're out. Thyme, a rosemary, all those lavenders, spearmint for mild winters. Any of the mints do very good on mild winters. So there's dill.
Yeah, dill's a good
fennel,
one.
Fennel. All those are others at direct seeding, or sometimes you can buy the little plants at the nursery.
So fennel can grow as an herb. You can use the leaves, the little tiny, or you can grow it as a full vegetable.
That is correct, yeah.
So what's the trick on doing that?
Yeah, there's a fennel that they call bulbing type fennel, and it's called Orion, is one of the selections. So it has a bulbous-like structure on the bottom, and you can, like you said, you can use the leaves that have that licorice taste, fragrance to it. And then when that bulbous-like structure, it has a beautiful white color to it, you lightly cut it and mix it into a regular salad. It's very delicious.
And leeks is another thing that you can grow in the wintertime, which is a good plant to have.
Lancelot leeks is a standard that is typically available, little plants.
It's an easy plant to grow.
It is very easy to grow. January is a good time for onions. So Dixondale Farms down in Carrizo, Texas, supplies most all the onion bunches, the little plantlets, 16 a bunch, and sometimes they sell that Lancelot one as well for the leeks. So some of the nurseries do have them in January.
Phone lines are open. You've got a question for David Rodriguez about how to get your winter garden going. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you've always been puzzled about how to get that, get your own herb garden going, a specific question, he can answer it for you to help you figure out how to make all that bloom. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We've got the Bexar County Gardening Guru with you this afternoon, David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. He's here to answer your questions about getting your winter gardening going, also how to recover, help your garden and your yard recover from this summer. So another dumb question for you from my own dumb experience, David. I planted potatoes a while back, earlier in the spring, and they grew and they did, but I never went back and I never harvested them. So how, because it got too hot and dirty and I got other stuff to do. So how good are they waiting for me?
Yeah, Irish potatoes are a fun one, particularly with kids. You know, you tell them, you know, French fries don't come. You know, that's and it's a good growing. So we buy them while the selection's best in January. We buy certified registered seed potatoes. So you're planting a tuber, you cut them. All the information on growing them is on Aggie Horticulture on the vegetable section. Fun to grow. So we plant around mid-February. We dirt them up a couple times up the stem so the little tubers can form off of that. And around May, the first thing that you're going to do is they start turning yellow or brown.
The leaves.
And our first reaction when something's yellow or brown, we want to water more and fertilize, which is the two worst things you can do for any plant typically. So that's about the time when most of those tubers are satisfied in size. So you can lightly cultivate in the soil and start plucking some of those and use them right away. Red Lesotho, Red Pontiac, White Kennebec, Yukon Gold, they don't store long, but if you've ever harvested new potatoes from the ground, unbelievable. Save some of those small tubers that are about golf ball size, as long as they don't have any bruising or wounds on them, and plant those if you want to try a fall crop about late July and August. And if all things are being equal, you can also bring some in for the fall. So why don't you see if any of those leaves, stems, if they haven't come up by November, most likely whatever was left in the ground, David, probably rotted on you.
Right, but the taste of these potatoes that you grow your own.
Unbelievable.
So much better.
Yes.
You have this nuttiness to them and a big difference than what you would get from the from the store.
Definitely, yeah. Luther Burbank was one of the best plant breeders this country. He had, of course, he did the russet Burbank potato, but those don't really do well. We grow much smaller ones, but we do a good job on those small ones here.
All right, let's go to Chris on the phones. Chris, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, guys. So I have a section of property that I'm ho- looking to turn it into a future soccer play field, something for my kiddos.
Okay.
I've dissed it up a couple times. It's real rocky clay soil, but I was hoping to get it ready this next year. I was wondering if there's anything I should do to the ground over this course of winter just to get ready to plant or seed in the spring.
So you want to manage the weeds the best that you can. If you think the soil's not that best or you're in an area that has limestone material, mainly rock or caliche, do measurements and possibly bring in a good amount of pasteurized topsoil that has compost in it. And if you do another tilling, work that in, level it out, rake it, rake it, rake it. And then what I would do no later than about November to the 1st is seed some ryegrass out there. You don't want to seed annual ryegrass. You want to use like a perennial type of a ryegrass, either Pantera or Greyhound. And that way you at least have coverage to minimize soil erosion, compacting of the soil, and might even reduce some weed pressure out there. And that ryegrass will have the root system will kind of bore into the soil. And it'll kind of loosen it up that way. And then once the heat comes up in the springtime and you're mowing it a couple times, don't let it go to seed, that will die out. That's why you want to use perennial. The perennials do not come back year in and year out here. It dies out. So we grow it as an annual, but we want to plant perennial. Then when it warms up next spring, I would source some quality recreational type Bermuda grasses they use on sports fields, one of the TIFF selections, i.e. TIFF 419. I get it straight from the sod farm. Make sure it's similar type of a soil. If you have clay soil, get it from a clay farm, not sand. Fresh from the farm, lay it as soon as you can. Solid like a carpet. Roll it with a sod roller. Keep it moist, but don't overwater it. And then boom, you have a soccer field going into the summer of next year.
Be a soccer pitch.
Soccer pitch.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Buddy on the phones. Buddy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah. I was wondering about a mountain laurel. I want to put one in my front yard. I need to know, is this a good time? How big a plant I should get and how deep I should plant it?
Okay. So Texas mountain laurel kicks off spring when red buds are blooming, and that fragrance, that grape cooler type fragrance is unbelievable. Texas mountain laurel needs good drainage, so you don't want to put it in an area that you're watering a lot, like next to a St. Augustine lawn and watering it too much as being a native plant. Likes the full sun. And you train it as a multi-trunk bush tree type. They're not going to get huge, you know, maybe 15, 18 feet or so. And as a rule of thumb, bigger doesn't necessarily mean better. Get what your budget can afford. Remember, the bigger the plant, the bigger the hoe it has to be. So, you know, be patient. I like to see things grow, but it depends on your budget. But the key on mountain laurels is most likely you get it in a container, gently transport it, and gently tap it out without disturbing that root system. Measure the container. Dig any plant or tree the size of the depth of the container that it's actually growing in. Plant it about an inch above grade, so if it settles at the soil line. The wider you can go, twice or more and more and more, go wide, 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 loosen up the soil. Use the native soil. If anything else, you'll amend it with no more than 20% finished compost with the native soil, and then put a little bit of mulch on it, get a bottle of root stimulator. Use it as recommended for the first 6 months. But just take gentle with the tree because the root system does not like to be disturbed.
And let's go to Suzanne. Suzanne, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I found that what I have is an oak tree that is very close to the foundation of my house. How do I dig it up and safely transplant it to another area?
So when you say close to the residence, how close is it? And is this a tree you planted or was a native tree that was there before the residence
it was I think it was seedlings from bird droppings or something. Because no, we did not plant it.
Okay. And how close is it to the residence?
It is probably about 2.5 to maybe 3 feet from the foundation.
It's real close. So wait till it's real cold and dormant season, January. And as a rule of thumb, for every inch of tree trunk, you need ideally a minimum of 12 inches of soil. Dig from the outskirts in and deep, and if you bare root it, fine. Just have a container that's appropriate size ready, or a new location kind of pre-dug. Gently move it, get it planted into its new home at the same soil depth. Tamp it in real well, water it in real well. Use that root stimulator. Don't plant it too deep in the ground, but I would wait till January would be the ideal time to consider doing that.
And let's go to Rick. Rick, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air with David Rodriguez.
Yes. Thank you. I have a question regarding wildflower seeds. I planted some in the spring.
Okay.
Will they sprout the next spring, or will they not survive the summer?
Okay. So are they spring-blooming wildflowers, or what type are they?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so spring-blooming wildflowers should ideally be planted in October, November. So they have to grow. They germinate, they grow, they overwinter, they vernalize. That means they initiate the flowers, and they bloom in the spring. So if you planted seed in the spring, did they bloom at all? How did they grow? How did they look in the spring when you planted them?
Rick, how'd they look?
They did not bloom.
Okay, so you can either, if they did not bloom and they're a reseeding type, then that means they didn't initialize any potential seed that will come back. So you're going to have to basically plant the seed again in October, November, and start this all over again.
Okay, so I got a question for you. You got about 45 seconds.
Okay.
You know how cheap I am. So I'm really always trying to get that packet of seed and stretch that as long as I can, season after season, you know, because, you know, the seeds are not cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
So what should I do?
Okay, so you try to buy a package, use it up as quick as you can. If not, seal it immediately after you open it. Put it in in your crisper or in the refrigerator next to your beer, David, and then put it in those little seal what are those little things you put food in?
Like a Tupperware thing.
Tupperware, and keep it sealed. But remember, seed species declines in a percentage of germination every year. So use them as soon as you can.
All right. I want to let everyone know that this Saturday, the Native Plant Society of Texas and the city's Park and Recreation Department is hosting a native plant sale at Phil Hardberger Park East from 9 a.m. to noon. There will be over 100 species of Texas native perennials and annual plants, grasses and shrubs and trees to choose from. And David Rodriguez, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
So you're looking forward to it? It's going to be a big, good summer, good winter for us?
It's going to be an excellent winter. We're going to be optimistic, David. It's going to rain here soon, and its temperatures are cooling down here soon, too.
So when's our first freeze?
December 12th.
Okay. All right. You heard it here. David Rodriguez is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture here in Bexar County. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.